All right, Rabosai, good morning. Good morning, let's begin. First of all, the breakfast this morning is in honor of a special Tzeischem L'Shalom to the Miller Mishpacha, who in Yerz Hashem are moving to California, B'Shah Tovu Mitzlachas, tomorrow, B'Shah Tovu Mitzlachas. The breakfast is sponsored by Nechemi Izvi, Said Haken, Ari Lerner, and we wish the Millers, we wish Reb Shmuel and his entire mishpacha incredible hatzlacha, and incredible sipuk b'chol ma'aseh yideichem. So let's begin. We're going to pick up Emir Tzashem this morning. Today's daf is Kuf Ayin Hey, 175, and we are picking up on 174b, Kuf Ayin Dalet Amud Beis, Amar Rav Huna, 2-5 lines up from the bottom. So the Gemara says the following, Amar Rav Huna, Shriv Mira, was a very interesting case. A shchimira who went ahead and consecrated all of his property. And what happens? So it's an interesting situation over here. On one hand, just the progression here is very important. He's makdish, he goes ahead and he consecrates all of his property, he says everything is hekdish, and then afterwards he says, oh, and by the way, mana laploni biyadi, that there's a mana, one mana of one mana, which is money, right? One mana belongs to ploni. So his statements are a little bit contradictory, because on one hand he was just makdish everything, but now he's saying that one mana of my property belongs to Ploni. So we'll say, what's Talacha? Ne'eman, we believe him. In other words, we believe him to say that although he was Makdish, his property, there's really one mana of his property which belongs to Ploni. Why? Chazoka in Adam ose kinunya al hekdish. Thank you much, Rav Fisher. Thank you. There's a chazaka that a person doesn't play games with hekdish. So even though he was makdish his property, when he says that mana laploni miyadi, we believe that statement. Maskev l'Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman says, one second, v'chi adam oseh kinunya abanav. But yet, would we say that a person would go ahead and play games with his children's Yerusha? But listen to the following case. To Rav Shmuel Darmit Arbayim, Rav and Shmuel both say, Shchiv mira sh'amar mana laploni miyadi. We'll say, Shchiv mira goes ahead and says, mana laploni miyadi. I owe a mana to ploni. Amar tnu nosnin. We'll say, if he says, tnu, if the Shchiv mira says, give the money to ploni, then we tell the Yarshin that they have to give the money to ploni. Lo amar tnu, but however, if the Shchiv mira does not say tnu, enosnin, then there is no obligation for the Yarshin to go ahead and give the money to ploni. So what do you see from here? Adam asui alma, Adam asui shlo lahasbiya as manat. So we'll say, what does this mean? Meaning, if let's say the Shchiv mira is on his deathbed. So now what we're saying over here is the following. And he makes a statement, and he says, manan laploni miyadi. I owe ploni a manat. So the halacha is, Rabbi Shlomo both say, if the Shchiv mira says tenu, if he orders them to give, then they give. If he doesn't say tenu, then he doesn't have to give. What's the pshat? To which the Gemara says, because again, sometimes we'll say, a person will make a statement in order shlo lahasbiya as manav, to make it look like his children do not have as much money. So Bosa, there is this concept, we've actually seen this before, that halacha l'maisa, sometimes a person doesn't want to give the impression that he's leaving so much money to his children. He wants to be a bit more modest in the assets being left in the estate. So the Gemara assumes that sometimes a person will make a statement that I owe money to Ploni. But in fact, what? He doesn't actually owe money to Ploni. He doesn't owe money to anyone. Rather, he's just making this statement in order to at least externally diminish the value or the holdings of the estate. How do you know if a person really means to pay off someone or is just making this statement to diminish the value of the estate? If he says tenu, if he says give the money, then we take that statement at its face value, that he actually owes the money. If he doesn't say tenu, then we just assume that lamaisa, what is he doing? He's trying to diminish the value of the estate. Of Kofayin Hey, Hachanami, so I can say the same thing over here by the Hekdish case. Adam Asu Shalo Lahasbiya Es Atzmo. Maybe I will say, maybe what's happening over here is the following, that a person is makdish his estate. A person is makdish his estate in order to somehow diminish the value of that estate. What does a person do? A person goes ahead and says, oh, I owe this money to Ploni. So we'll say, so what he's saying is, because when a person is makdish, remember at some point in time, the value of that estate may become known, because it could be that hektish records are public. So in order to diminish the full value of the estate, he makes the statement that I owe money to Ploni. So maybe again, he doesn't really owe, but rather he's just trying to diminish the value. Take a look at the tap. Rashi ba hachanami kabe hektish ikalameimar lekach niskavin va'amai kamarafuna ne'eman v'nos lemar asenoros. Why does the Gemara automatically assume that when the Shchemira says that after he's makdish his property, he goes in and he says, and I owe a money to Ploni, why do we automatically believe him? Why don't we just say that perhaps he's trying to diminish the value of the estate? I just think, when I say diminish the value, he's trying to make it look like the estate is worth less. To which the Gemara says, no. Ki kam Rav Huna, they both say, when Rav Huna said his ruling, remember, so Rav Huna's ruling was that a Shchemira who is makdish all of his property, and then he says, mana leploni, that he's Naman, which means that we pay off the debt. So when does Rav Huna say that? Dinakit shtara. Both say, Rav Huna's case is where there is a shtar that is produced, right? The malve, the lender, produces a shtar, and the shchimera was moda that the shtar is in fact authentic. That's when halacha l'maisa we will say that the estate has to pay off the debt. Mechlad the Rav Shmuel the lo nakit shtara. So I tell me the Rabbos say that the case of Rav and Shmuel. Remember, the case of the Rav and Shmuel is the case of the shchimera who said mana leploni biyadi. So we'll say, we sing over here that that's the case where there is no shtar. To which the Gemara says the lo nakit shtara amar tnu nos. And if that's the case, when the Shchemira says, give the mana to Ploni, why should they be chayef to do that? After all, that's a case of milva alpe. We'll say that's a case of a verbal loan. The Rav Shmuel Dermetar Vayu milva alpe, in a gobe lo min ayarshim lo min alakuchos. But we're going to see this in some days, that Rav and Shmuel are both of the opinion that what? When you have a milva alpe, when you have a verbal loan, that loan cannot be collected from Yarshim, nor can it be collected from purchasers. Elo Amar Rav Nachman, Idi v'Idi dinakit shtara. Rather, says Rav Nachman, I will say both cases, the case of Hekdish, as well as the case of Shchemira, who says that he owes money to Ploni, both are cases, I will say, where there's a shtar. So why the difference in Allah? So you have to understand something. In Rav Huna's case of Hekdish, so there's no machlokes. In Rav Huna's case of Hekdish, so we'll call him Ruvain, was makdish his nechassim. He consecrated his property, and then he said, I owe him money to Ploni. So what did Rav Huna say? We believe him, and we pay off the money to Ploni. In the second case, Rav said, when the Shchemira is on his deathbed, and he says what? I owe him money to Ploni. So Rav and Shmuel make a chilik. What's the chilik? If he just said, I owe him money to Ploni, we don't pay it. But if he says, Chinu money to Ploni, we do say it. So why the distinction between the cases? To which the Gemara says, you're right, both cases are both say where there's a shtar. Meaning in both cases, there is a document that says, Ruvain Shchemira owes the mal the money. So why the distinction? Velo kasha, had mekuyam, had lo mekuyam. Well, I said, look at the Rashman for just a moment. Ela Amar Rav Nachman, but it's in these shorter lines, about four lines in. Ela Amar Rav Nachman, bein zesh shamar shchemira mana leploni biyadi. Vehu bali parim in a hektish, u bein zeha bali parim in banav, kulu shtar nikiti. The maski b'hai shchemira mana velo kasha. So we'll say both of these cases are cases where the malvet, the lender, produces a shtar. So why the difference in the cases, Rabbi Osei? Ha, the hektish, b'mekuyim di'ika henpik. Rabbi Osei, in the case of hektish, is where there's a shtar. Not only is there a shtar, but what? The shtar is certified. Oh, so if you produce a certified shtar, then what? Then halacha l'maisi, even the shchemira, was makdish, his nechasim, nevertheless, the estate is going to pay off the debt. However, Rabbi Osei, the second case is where there's a shtar, but it's not certified. So if it's not certified, Rabbi Osei, then what? Then the obligation is upon the malvet to prove that he is still owed the debt. So if the shchemira himself said tnu, that's indicative that what? That it has not been paid back. So because the debt hasn't been paid, therefore again, the estate would pay it back. If it didn't say tnu, then again we have to investigate whether the debt has ever been paid back or not. So the Gemara says, Hadim Mekhoi Lomekhoi, Amar tnu, Kaimei the shtari. So we'll say, if the Shchemira says tnu, then essentially the Shchemira himself is certifying the shtar. Lo amar tnu, but if he doesn't say tnu, then what? Lo kaimei lishtarei. Then I will say the document is not certified, and therefore before we pay any money to the malva, we have to go ahead and investigate whether or not there is indeed a valid claim, and whether or not it has actually been paid back. So we'll say, so again, we understand over here, and if you look at the Rashbam, lo amar tnu, chayshinan dilma mishum shalol lahasbiya es banav amar ha'i, but lo gavi adam ha'kaim lishtarei. So we'll say, if you didn't say tnu, then perhaps you're just making this statement to diminish, or at least to publicly diminish the value of the estate, but it doesn't actually mean to go out and pay money to the particular person in question. Fine. So the Gemara goes right to Amar Rabba. Rabba says, Shchemira sha'amar mana leploni, Shchemira sha'amar mana leploni biyadi, v'amru yisomim paranu. Listen to this. Let's say the Shchemira says, mana le ploni miyati, which is another way of saying, I owe a mana to ploni. Okay, then what happens? He dies, and the yisomim say, paranu, we paid back the malva already. So what's the halacha? Ne'emanin. So the yisomim will be believed. Tenu mana le ploni. But if the shchemira says, give a mana to ploni, v'amru yisomim paranu, and the yisomim said, we paid back already, ein ne'emanin, they are not believed. They are not believed. So says Gemara, 1 second. Klap elaya ipcha mestabra. The exact opposite would seem to be true. Amar tnu mana. So we'll say if the Shchemira says give a mana to Ploni, kevan de paska avu on the milsa ikal lemir de pari. See, they both say I would say just the opposite. If a man's on his deathbed, Reuven is Shchemira, and Reuven says to his children tnu mana la Ploni, give a mana. So we'll say this. The Gemara says the reality is what would be the reaction of the children in that moment? What would they do? They would pay it. They pay it. If they realize that this is their father's deathbed request, so one can make the cogent argument that they would actually pay it now, in an effort to satisfy their father's desires now. However, mana l'ploni b'yadi, if the father just makes a statement, there's a mana belonging to Ploni in my possession, kevan d'la pasak avu l'mil say, since the father did not make a declarative statement of tenu mana l'ploni, I would have said that what? That the children didn't pay. In other words, we'll say, the Gemara makes the assumption that when the father, the Shchemira, makes a statement and he makes a command and he says, gives a directive, he says, Tnu, the assumption is that the children are going to comply with that paternal directive and pay off their father's debt. Mashenkin, if the father just makes a statement of Manala Poni Miyati, but doesn't give his children instructions about that, so the Pashtas, we assume the children aren't actively doing anything about that. Ella, I itmar haki itmar. Rather, says the Gemara, here's how you have to understand the case. Shchemira. Shamar mana l'ploni b'yadi. You also watch this. So we'll say, here is the Reuven. If a Shchemira says, mana l'ploni b'yadi, right? There is a money belonging to Ploni in my possession. Va'amru yisomim chazar. Va'amru lanu abba parati ne'emanin. So we'll say, watch this. So Shchemira says, mana l'ploni miyadi. Shchemira dies. Then what happens? The Yisomim say, our father told us that he paid it back. He said, yes, there was a mana l'ploni miyadi, and he paid it back, and he paid it back. Ne'emanim. Well, say the Yisomim are believed to when they make this statement. My time, ad kuri mitkar. Because they will say, the statement of mana l'ploni miyadi is just a statement, meaning it's not an instruction, it's a statement. So the way the Yisomim are believed to shape the narrative. So they're believed to say that when our father said, mana l'ploni miyadi, he also told us that what? After he told us that he had a mana belonging to Ploni's possession, he also said what? He also said, I paid it back. So therefore, again, because he didn't issue to them an order for repayment, ultimately, again, they are believed to shape the narrative. So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, I just skipped. If the father said, give him a to Ploni, so we'll say, but in the second case, where the Shchemira said, give a mana to Ploni. So we'll say, he's giving a directive. Pay back my debt. And then what happens? Shchemira dies. The Yisomim say, our father came back and told us that's what? That he went out and he paid back the debt. Ein emanu. We'll say, they are not believed in that case. Why? Dim isa depare. Because if indeed the father had paid the debt, then what? Lo hava amar tnu. He would have never said the word tnu. So we'll say, and this, by the way, in this case. So therefore, again, we'll say, in a case where the father makes a declarative statement and says, mana l'ploni b'yadi, and then dies, the Yisumim are believed to say that the father paid back the debt. Because we'll say, the statement of mana l'ploni b'yadi is not an instruction to the children. It's a statement. So the Yisumim are believed then to shape the narrative and say, after our father said that he borrowed money from Ploni, he also told us that he paid it back. Masha'inkein, when he gives them a directive and he says, Tenu mana l'ploni, Dirabo say he's giving them instructions. If they come back and say, oh, our father said that he paid back the debt, they're not believed, because that doesn't stim with the instructions that he's giving them. So the Gemara goes right there. Bari Rava. Rava will say, ask the following kasha. Shchemira shehodu mahu. So we'll say, listen to this case. Take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Shchemira shehoda. It's about the 10 lines up from the bottom of the Rashbam. Shchemira shehoda. Bal chovo toin lo, mana li biyadecha, va'amar lo hein. Dichiyai gav narina b'sanhedrin b'perek zeb borer. Ritar shemar atem edai ve'ilo matzi amrle mishatani b'chad. So we'll say here's the case. So Ruvain's a shchemira, and another Shimon comes over to him, and Shimon says, you know, I lent you money, right? And Ruvain says, yes, I'm molded to the fact that you lent me money. Okay, so that's the case of shchemira. Shchemira shehoda. So we'll say, so mahu. What does a shchemira, what has to be done now in order to make this an enforceable claim on the part of the malva? So tzarech lomar atem edai. So we'll say, under normal circumstances, if somebody comes over to me and says, silver, you owe me $1,000. And I say, yes. So we'll say, my admission to that does not make it an enforceable claim. In order to make it a first thing, what has to happen? I have to say, listen, you two guys over here, you be the Edim that I owe Reuven $1,000. So the Shaila is, so the Malveh comes over to Shchemira, says, Shchemira, you owe me $1,000. Shchemira says, yes, I do. I admit it, I do. So we'll say, so the Shaila is, what now has to happen in order to make this an enforceable claim? Does the Shchemira have to say, Atem Edai? Does he have to say to two people who are saying there, you are my, does he have to designate witnesses? Oh, in Tzarech Lomar Atem Edai. Or perhaps because it's a Shchemira, the rules are a bit different, and he need not actively designate them as witnesses. Furthermore, Tzarech Shomar Ksobu, or in Tzarech Shomar Ksobu, both say, does the Shchemira have to say to the individuals there, you guys commit this to writing? In other words, write this down for me, commit this to a shtar, or not? So you both say, and here's the fundamental shayla. Adam mishata b'shas misa, or ein adam mishata b'shas misa? You both say, here's the fundamental question. Do people joke around when they're dying, or do people not joke around when they're dying? In other words, you both say, if somebody's a shchemira, which means he's on death's door, so do we assume that his words are exceptionally measured, and therefore, again, whatever he says, we take seriously. So therefore, again, when the Malveh confronts the Shchemira, the Malveh says, Shchemira, you owe me $1,000. And the Shchemira says, yes. The Rabbosai, there's no, the Shchemira, when his words are measured and are concrete. Therefore, again, there's no need for him to employ the additional mechanisms to solidify his words. He doesn't have to say, you guys are my witnesses. He doesn't have to say, committed to writing, because we take his words very seriously. What's that? That's the fundamental shayla. To which the Gemara says, but first wide line on the bottom, Basar debaya hadir pashta. So we'll say, after we asked the question, we answered it, Ein adam mishata b'shas misa. And we'll say, this is a halacha. We assume that people do not joke around when they are dying. And when a person goes ahead and says something, we take those words. In other words, what the Gemara is saying is the following. When a person realizes that they're dying, so that lemaisa, again, their words are measured, and their words are serious. Therefore, again, when the Shchemira is molded to the halva, when he admits that he owes the money, that creates a binding reality upon the Shchemira. And therefore, v'divrei Shchemira kiksun v'chimshun arum. So it's actually quite interesting. But remember, we've seen this principle many times before. That the words of a Shchemira are kiksuvin v'chim surin damu. That the words of a Shchemira, we'll say, are binding, even without what? Even without normative kinyanim. We've seen this concept many times before. Now, for the first time, we understand why. So we've always assumed that, why do we hold divrei Shchemira kiksuvin v'chim surin damu? That the words of Shchemira are like they're committed to writing. Meaning, the words of a Shchemira are as binding as if regular kinyanim have been made. So we always assume that the reason for that was to give a certain amount of what we'll call it emotional tranquility to the Shchemira. That it should give him inner peace to know that whatever he wants done is done, even without the use of formal kinyonim. Now the Gemara is saying there's an additional piece, because the Shchemira has a certain degree of credibility that other people do not. Why? Because, well, sometimes people say stuff that they don't mean. Sometimes people say stuff that may not be true. We assume that a Shchemira, because he's on death's door, his words are concrete, his words are believable. So because of that, Rabbosai, anything he says is kiksuvin v'chim surin domu. So we'll say, just, and therefore again, halacha lemaisa, when the Malveh confronts the Shchemira, and he's modi, he owes the debt, Rabbosai, he doesn't need to go out and call upon people to witness it, nor does he have to be order it to be written down, but rather again, his admission has the same power as Edim. His admission ultimately, again, has the same power as if the document, as if the chov was recorded in a document. Why? Because divrei shchemira kiksuvin v'chim surin damu. We'll say, just you should know, this yisod of ein adam mishata b'shas misa. You know, Rabbi, this, what is it? How do you define b'shas misa? So you know, again, Chazal tell us shuv yom echad lifnei mosecha, that a person should do tshuva one day before you die. So of course, there's an inherent problem, which is what? Which is what? You don't know when you're going to die. So therefore, Rabbi say what? Every single day is Yom Echad Lifnei Misecha. And Rabbi say, and I don't mean this in a morbid way, but Rabbi say, all of us are dying, right? Meaning every day brings us one step closer to Misa. If it's true that each and every one of us are dying, but in a happy way, I know that sounds strange, right? In other words, that ultimately, again, meaning we recognize, we embrace mortality. Mortality is not something that depresses us. In fact, just the opposite. Mortality is something that encourages us to be able to take advantage of our moments. But at the end of the day, if we accept the premise of Chazal, that shuv yom echa lefdei mosecha, that go ahead and do tshuva one day before you die, and every day is one day before I die, because I don't know what today holds. I don't want to tell you, we'll say, then this yisur becomes true. Ein adam mishata b'shas misa. We'll say, b'shas misa, every single day is b'shas misa. And therefore, again, there's no time for shtus. There's no time for silliness. There's no time for sarcasm. There's no time for cynicism. There's no time for bittelsman. There's no time for excuses. There's no time for kicking the can down the road, for you know not how long the road extends. Ein adam mishata b'shas misa, Rabosai, becomes a mantra not just for how to die, but becomes a mantra for how to live. If I recognize that, again, I don't know the amount of time I have in this world, then by definition, there's no time for any kind of shtus. There's no time for any kind of zulzul. There's no time to waste because there's so much I have to accomplish, and I know not how much time I have in this world. Incredible yisod, says the Mishnah. Yes? Say that again?
He's confused.
Oh, so you're saying good. So all of this, by the way, and this is important that is brought down by the poskim, all of this presupposes that we know that the Shemira is absolutely lucid, that he has clear mind. If there's a concern that the Shemira may not have mental clarity, then these halachos are dramatically different. This all assumes that he's physically compromised, but intellectually absolutely intact. Says the Mishnah. What's the go back? The last Mishnah of the Masechta. Last Mishnah of the Masechta. Get ready. So says the Mishnah, Malves Chavero, Bishtar. So we'll say, now a lot of this, by the way, is going to review different concepts that we have learned along the way. So a person goes ahead and lends his friend money with a shtar. So we'll say, in this case, so ultimately, again, the chov is recorded in a document. So we'll say, if you have a shtar, go v'min echasim mishubatim. Then you could go ahead and collect from encumbered properties. So we'll say, again, we know, means that I lend Reuben $1,000. So what that shtar does is place a lien upon his property. So in the event that it comes time to go ahead and collect the debt, Reuben doesn't have any property to his name, but he had assets at the time of the loan that he subsequently sold off. I can go to those purchasers in an effort to go ahead and recollect my debt. Now, I will say, the Rashbam makes a very important point over here. Look at the Rashbam. Hamales chaveiro b'shtar. Afilu ein kasav bo achrayis. Hak paskin on hilchasa b'shtayim ochzin. The achrayit to us over. I will say, it's very important. Remember, every loan comes with achrayis. Every loan comes with a lien against property. Even if the document does not include that achrayis statement, we assume that the omission of achrayis is simply what? Scribal error. Now again, that being said, two people can stipulate upon themselves that there is no encumbrance upon them. In other words, if the malve agrees to not have an encumbrance against the property of the Lova, then of course that works. That works. But assuming that they did not negotiate that, but said there is an automatic lien against the property of the borrower when the borrower borrows money from the Malva, even if it's not stated in the Shtar. Next, Aide Eidim, Govminu Chasim Nechon. I will say again, however, if the loan was not recorded in a document, but rather again, it was simply witnessed. And I will say, what witnessed means is that what? It's a verbal transaction. I say in front of witnesses see, or not wrong, I mean, I give Reuven $1,000, I give it to him in front of witnesses, but it's never recorded in front of a shtar. So we'll say, if that's the case, if there's no document, I cannot collect from encumbered properties, from the chasim mishubadim, I can only collect from the chasim nechor. I can only collect from that which Reuven, the borrower, owns, at the time that the debt is due. Amud Beis. Hotel Sab Yadushu Chayevlo. Moshe, listen to this. Let's say again, I lend Reuven $1,000, and I produce a shtar that's written in Reuven's own handwriting, where he writes, I borrowed $1,000 from silver, and I owe silver $1,000. So Moshe, what's the halacha? Govim in the chasim and echorin. Rebbe say, even that's not called the shtar. Or Rebbe say, it's called the shtar, and it allows me to collect the money from Reuven, but it does not create an encumbrance against Reuven's property. Why, Rebbe say? Because in order to create a lien, you need two things. You need the shtar, and you need Aiden. Because Rebbe say, that combination of a document and Aiden creates a call. That call, that voice creates a knowledge that anyone who purchases property, some Reuven knows that there's an outstanding encumbrance against that land. But if there's only a shtar but no edim, or only edim without a shtar, the call is not created, and therefore the encumbrance is not created as well. So listen to this. Arif hayotzi la'achar kitim shtaros. What's this really fascinating Mishnah? So here I have an interesting case. I lent Reuven $1,000. You draw up a document, a regular document, with Adam and everything, right after the signatures of the witnesses. So the Arev, we'll call him Shimon, writes his guarantee on the shtar. Right? Shimon writes, in the event that Reuven cannot repay the debt, I, Shimon, agree to repay the debt. So we'll say, what's the halacha? So now, let's say, we'll say, Reuven defaults. I'm the lender, I come to collect from Shimon the guarantor. What's the halacha? Govim and Echasim and Echorin. I can only collect from Shimon, the guarantor's unencumbered property. The Rabbah say, why can I only collect from his unencumbered property? The Rabbah say, the idea over here is because Shimon's guarantorship is not considered to be something that is part of the shtar proper. Why not? Because it's included after the signatures of the witnesses. The Rabbah say, the only thing that's considered to be part of the bona fide shtar is what? That which is included before the signatures of the witnesses. This is an add-on to the document. Because it's an add-on to the document, therefore, again, it does not generate a call. Because it does not generate a call, the guarantor is only obligated vis-a-vis his nechasim and echorin, but not his nechasim mishubadim. So the Gemara says the following. So the Gemara, take a look at Rashi. Government nechasim and echorin, mina arev, it's right across from the Rashbam. Mina arev ba'arvus shebape, demilva alpehi, kevan delochasimi edim ala arvus, boadin la'arev below shtar achar matamo. So what's the idea over here is that even though the arev is writing down his guarantorship on the document, because it's after the signatures, it's not considered to be part of the shtar proper. Because it's not considered to be part of the shtar proper, therefore again, the arev is only on the hook vis-a-vis his unencumbered properties, but not vis-a-vis any encumbered properties. So listen to this. So we said there was an episode that once came up for Rabbi Shmuel. So we'll say what happened, and Rabbi Shmuel, we'll discuss exactly what this case is. And Rabbi Shmuel paskin that you can only collect from the chasim and echorin. So we'll say bepashas, what it sounds like is this same type of case. There was a case I lent Reuven money. Witnesses sign on the shtar. After the witnesses sign, Shimon writes down his guarantorship. Shimon writes down that ultimately, again, I agree to secure the debt. I go to collect from Reuven. Reuven defaults. I go to Shimon, and now what happens? Shimon is only on the hook for his nechasim and echor, not nechasim mishubadim. So Amar lo Benanas. Benanas said, no, in that case, in a gov alom and achasim mishubadim, v'lom and achasim and echorin. But we'll say, Benana says in this kind of case, the orev is on the hook for nothing. Not nechasim mishubadim, not nechasim and echorin. Omer lo lama. Shabbos say, what Benana seems to be saying, Rabbos say, is that the orev will be chayiv nothing. So Rabbi Shmuel says to him, I don't say, why would the orev be chayiv nothing? Let's listen to this case. Omer lo, Hariachonik es echad b'shok. Umatza chaveiro va'amar lo hanoch lo v'ani etenecha. Let's listen to this case. I walk into the shuk, and what do I see? I see Reuven choking Shimon. There was like, now the case over here of choking doesn't have to mean choking. Choking, what it means, I see him physically coercing. In other words, so we'll say the case over here is, I walk in, and I see that Reuven is physically coercing Shimon. Now, whatever the backstory is, I don't know. But what I do know is the following. It has something to do with money. So I tell Reuven, listen, leave Shimon alone. Hanach lo, vani etein lecha. You know, whatever Shimon owes you, I agree to pay you back. The boss say, what's talocha? Potter. I'm not on the hook for that money. Why? Shelo al amanasu helbo. I will say because, again, the case over here is obviously what happened. Reuven lent Shimon money. Shimon is not repaying. Reuven has Shimon in a chokehold. I come along and I say, Reuven, let him go. I'll go ahead and I'll pay you back. So I will say, I'm not on the hook for anything. Why? Because the only time a guarantor is on the hook is when, Rabbi Osai, when it's clear that the lender lent the money based on the assurance of the guarantor. Rabbi Osai, it's an incredible yisod in arvus, in guarantorship. A guarantor is only obligated when the loan was made because he secured it. But if the guarantor comes on the scene later on, after the loan was already made, which means that the Malva was willing to lend the Lova money even without what? Even without the guarantee or the assurances of the guarantor, in that case the guarantor is not bound by anything. Shalo amunusu avau. Ela ezu arif shuchayif. Says Banana says, so what is the type, when is a guarantorship binding? When is it actually binding? To which the Gemara says, Helvo vani no sein lecha. Rabbi say, I go ahead and I say to Reuven, lend Shimon money and I secure the debt. So Rabbi say, in that case, that's when Banana says a guarantorship is binding. Why? Because it's clear that what? That the reason why Reuven is lending the money is because I'm guaranteeing it. Shekein al amanos sahova. Rabbi say, this is an incredibly dramatic interpretation. Banana is saying is that any time, the only time a guarantor is going to be chayif to secure the debt, Rabbi say, is when it's clear that the loan was made based on his assurance. I say to Reuven, lend Shimon the money and I will guarantee it. And Reuven says, okay, I, the guarantor, am on the hook because it's only because of my guarantorship that Lamaisa the loan was made. Shekein al amunoso helvo. Both said, this is the operative phrase. Shekein al amunoso helvo. Because the malva, because the lender has faith in me, that's ultimately why he lent the money. Which I will say tells you something amazing. Therefore, any case where the guarantor comes in after the fact, where the guarantor comes in after the loan was already made, even though he says, I'll guarantee the loan, he's not on the hook. Why, Rabbi Osai? Because since he was not a party to the original transaction, therefore, again, the loan was made even without his initial promise, and therefore, the Maisi is not bound to go ahead and pay back this debt. But Amar Rabbi Shmuel, so what's Rabbi Shmuel ends up, Lish Mishnah ends up in an interesting way. Harotah sheyachkim yasok b'dini mamanis. It will say, if you really want to become a Talmud Chacham, you should spend your time learning the halachos monetary law. Why? She'im lecha miktsoa b'tora yosven. Because it will say, first of all, there is no area of halacha that has such a voluminous amount of law. Meaning the greatest number of halachos focus on monetary, which I will say makes sense, because so much of life is money, so much of life is business, so much of life ultimately again is parnasa. So therefore, Bishmael says, if you really want to polish your halachic, because when you come to Talmud Chacham, devote yourself to learning dinei mamonos, and they are behein kamayon hanovea. They are like a flowing spring. In other words, that's another way of saying they're constantly changing, ever evolving, and there's always more to learn. Barotah shiyasok b'dinei mamonos. And I will say, if you really want to learn proper halachas, you want to learn dinei mamonos, yishamesh as Shimon ben Nanas. Then ultimately, again, you should learn from Rabbi Shimon ben Nanas. So I will say, the idea over here, Rabbi Shmuel says two beautiful things. Number one, you want to become a Talmud Chacham, engage in monetary law, because again, it's the most voluminous amount of halachas. And if you want to really learn how to paskin these halachas, you want to learn ultimately, again, how to decide these halachas, you should be mishamesh Shimon ben Nanas. So I will say, you understand, the lashon of shimush, by the way, is of course much more than just learning from. You know, we have in general this concept of Chazal that if a person wants to really learn from their Rebbe, it's not enough just to hear their spoken words. Shimush Talmidei Chacham is such an important yisod, because sometimes we learn so much more from the behaviors and from observing our Rebbeim than just from hearing learning their Torah is one piece. But Rabbi Shmuel is saying over here, don't just learn Shimon ben Nanas' Torah, Yeshamesh Shimon ben Nanas, right? Go ahead, stay with him, serve him, take care of him, and you'll learn just from his behaviors, ultimately, again, how to be a fully formed Talmud Chacham. We'll discuss this in greater depth. So, Moshe says the Gemara, Amar Ula. So we'll say, what comes out, we have a number of very, very important things that come out from this Mishnah. Number one, encumbrance against real property is only established through a shtar. But shtar, in order to create the lien against real property, Rabbi said, needs two things. Number one, a document. Number two, signatures of witnesses. Anytime a transaction is verbal, the only thing it creates is a lien against unencumbered property, but not against encumbered property. Rabbi said, furthermore, again, guarantorship. So if it comes out after the signatures of the witnesses on the shtar, the guarantor is only on the hook for nechasim and nechor nechasim mishubanim. But more importantly, the Gemara frames for us that the only time an arev truly becomes chayiv to secure and to guarantee a debt, Rabbi Yosei, is when it's clear that the loan was made based on his promise. But if the loan was made without the guarantor, and the guarantor only comes on the scene later on, then halacha lamaisa, he is not really, even though he says he's bound to secure the debt, he's not really halachically bound because the debt was made without him. Fine. Says the Gemara, Amru Ula, Dvar Torah, Echad Milva Bishtar, Ve'echad Milva Bepeh, Ve'echad Milva Alpeh, Gov Benechasim Mishubadim. So we'll say, Ula comes along and says, in reality, Midoraisa, whether you lent money verbally, without a shtar, or you lent money with a shtar, in reality, again, government nechasim mishubadim. Rabbi Yosei midoraisa, the Ula suggesting that every loan creates a lien against real property. My time, what's the reason for that? Shibuda daoraisa. Because Rabbi Yosei Ula paskin that midoraisa, every loan creates a lien against real property. Whether it's recorded in a shtar, not recorded in a shtar, midoraisa, every loan creates then against real property. We'll say, if you look at the Rashi, and we'll develop this more, the Rashi says, where did he get the Shevita D'Oraisa? Yotzi Elecha Ha'avut, B'hu Adin L'Mekar Koi. Because we'll say, you know, the Torah speaks out the idea that when you lend money, you cannot go ahead and enter into the home of the borrower to seize collateral. Rather, what do you have to do? You have to wait by the entranceway of the home and allow the borrower to bring the collateral to you. So the Gemara is going to darshan based on that, then in reality, when you lend money to someone, all of their property, both real and movable property, is encumbered. So Ula paskins shibuda d'oraisa. That bless you. That really, whether you lend with a document or verbally, it creates a lien against real property. So if that's the case, why did Chazal come along and say that if you lend verbally, right, without a shtar, that it does not create a lien against real property? You can only collect from unencumbered property. Because I will say we were concerned that what? We're concerned about the fact that if the borrower sold property after the date of the loan, and it's not recorded in a shtar, then what? Those purchasers have no way of knowing about the loan. So in order to protect the purchasers, Chazal came along and said that if the loan is not recorded in a document, then what? Then the lender, the malveh, cannot collect from the chasim mishubadim. To protect the purchasers. Yochi, if that's the case, milva bishtar nami. So I don't say that if that's the case, that you want to protect the purchasers, why don't you say the same thing even if the loan was recorded in a document? Or say that even though it was recorded in a document, if the borrower subsequently sold off property, we should not allow the lender to go ahead and seize that property in satisfaction of the debt in order to protect the purchasers. To which the Gemara says, Hasam inhu da'afsidu anafshayu. I will say, if it's recorded in a shtar and there are eidin, then what? Then that shtar has a kol. That shtar has a voice. If that's the case, suppose that it has a kol, then what? And the purchasers choose not to pay attention to that, they cause themselves their own loss. In other words, we'll say, once it's occurred in the shtar, then it's public knowledge. If it's public knowledge, then you should have been a little bit more vigilant. If you weren't vigilant, you have no one to blame but yourself. But Rabba, so we'll say, that's Shitas Ula. Rabba Amar Dvar Torah, Echad Milva Bishtar, Ve'echad Milva Alpeh, Eina Gova Ela Minechasem B'nei Chorin. But on the other hand, Rabba says, that Midaraisa, whether you lent in a shtar, whether you lent alpeh, you do not have the right to, you could only collect from unencumbered property. My time, what's the reason? Shibuda lav daraisa. Because what Rabba holds, that midaraisa, there is no lien against real property. Therefore, midaraisa, whether you lent verbally or whether you lent in a shtar, you only get to collect unencumbered property. if that's the case, if that's the case, then why did Chazal say that if you lend with the shtar, you have the ability to collect even from encumbered properties? Because we will say, what Chazal were concerned about was the following. Remember, and we've spoken this many times, that Jewish lending in general is not a for-profit venture. If I know that if I lend money, only thing I could collect from is from unencumbered property, which means Rabbi Osai, that if I go ahead and at the time that I lend property, at the time that I lend money to the borrower, the borrower has assets, and then he subsequently sells off those assets, I have no recourse to reclaim those sold assets, then what? Then what? I'm not going to lend. Therefore, in order to safeguard the Jewish loan market, Chazal said, listen, if you commit the loan to writing, then Einach Inami, you have recourse, and you could seize sold properties in satisfaction of your debt. Iachi milva al pen nami. If that's the case, then even if I lend verbally, meaning if this is about securing the debt, so as to encourage people to loan money, even if the loan is verbal, I should still be able to collect sold properties. Hasam lest I call off. Then I will say, there we have to be concerned. We try to leverage this a little bit. Then I have to be concerned that the purchasers did not know about the debt, and therefore it's unfair to go ahead and hold them accountable to yield the properties that they bought. So we'll say, so what we have over here is a fundamental machlokes in Ula and Rabba. Ula says that midda'oraisa, every debt is collectible from nechasim mishubadim. Why? Because Dvar Torah, Shibuda Doraisa. Right? Or I should say Shibuda Doraisa. They hold again, Midoraisa, every debt, both the ones recorded in the document and the ones that are verbal, generate an encumbrance against all types of properties, all types of real property. Rabbah, on the other hand, says, no, Shibuda Lav Doraisa. Midoraisa, both say you have no encumbrances at all. Chazal instituted an encumbrance in order to go ahead and facilitate people making loans to one another. So Gemara says, "Miyama Rabba Hachi." Did Rabba really say Shibuda Lav Doraisa? That ultimately, again, an encumbrance is not Doraisa. After all, V'ha Amar Rabba. Yeah, Rabba said that. Thought about saying, "Gavu Karka Yeshlo Gavu Mos in the Rabba." So we actually learn this. Take a look at the Rashbam. The Rashbam says, "Umi Amar Rabba Shibuda Lav Doraisa." Did Rabba really hold that midoraisa there is no encumbrance against real property? After all, the Ha Amrina Perak Yeshnochlin Shalchu Mitam. They sent them Eretz Yisrael. I'm reading Rashbam now. Becharnot al Pishnayim b'Malva. V'Amar Rabba Allah. So let's listen to this. This is a case where the father died. Right, father died, left behind. We'll call it three sons. One of those sons is a bechor. Bechor gets Pishnayim, a double portion. But let's say again, someone owed the father money. So we'll call him Ruvain, owed the father $1,000. So what happens, Rabbi Yosef? The shaila is, does the Bechor get Pishnayim in that halva, in that debt that is owed to the estate? V'amar Rabbi said, I'm reading the Rashbam. Agsura'im am Rabbi Allah, Gavu karka bechova saviyem yeshlo, the command the Mishabe Bechaya Abuhandami, the Karina Bechala Shemat. So listen to this. So Rabbi holds, if the debt is secured by land, then the Bechar gets Pishnayim. Why Rabbi say? Because if the debt was secured by land, then it's as if the father owned that property during his lifetime. So remember again, Pishnayim, remember from our Pishnayim days, that the halacha is a bechor gets pishnayim in what's called muchzak and not ro'oi, which means what? A bechor gets pishnayim on anything that is owned by the estate, not in that which the estate is entitled to. So Rabbi says something very interesting. If the father went ahead and made a loan, and that loan was secured by real property, then what? It's as if that real property was owned by the estate while the father was alive. If that's the case, when the father dies, the Bechor gets Pishnayim in that debt. Rabbi says, so what do you see from there? You see from there, it would appear, that Shibuda Doraisa. In other words, we're saying over here that the lien against real property is a real biblical reality. That contradicts what Rabbi just said before. Rabbi just said before, Shibuda's Lav Doraisa. So which one is it? Maybe you'll say, you have to reverse the shitos. Maybe it's Ula who holds that Shibuda Lav Doraisa, and Rabu holds Shibuda Doraisa. No, that can't be. V'hamra Ula, Dvar Torah Balchov Dinei B'Ziburis. Yet Ula Rabbah says the one who said that midaraisa a bal chov gets to collect from ziburas. Now Rabbah say, now this is a different shita. But you see, Ula holds that shibuda daraisa. But Ula holds shibuda daraisa is only on what Rabbah say, only on ziburas, only on the most inferior quality of land. But nevertheless, we don't care about ziburas right now. What we do care about is that Ula is on record as saying that midaraisa there is a shibur against karka. To which the Gemara says, so it's clear that Ula is one who holds Shibuda Doraisa, and Rabba is one who holds Jat Shibuda Lav Doraisa. To which the Gemara says, Ella Rabba Taima Debre Ma'arava Ka'amar Vale Lo Sivule. In other words, what you have to say is in this Brisa about the Pishnaim, but says, so ultimately again, Rabba is espousing the position of the Bnei Ma'arava, which means the people of Eretz Yisrael, the Rabbanim of Eretz Yisrael. The Rabbanim will say of Eretz Yisrael hold like Ula, that Shibuda Doraisa, and therefore in the case of the Bechor, if the loan was secured by real property, the Bechor would get Pishnaim in that. However, Velei Lo Svirolei. But Lamaisa, again, what Rabbanim will say, but Lamaisa, Ula himself does not hold of this, rather Ula himself holds that Shibuda Lav Doraisa. Rav Shmuel Dami Tavai. I'm supposed to actually know. We're going to stop over here for today because Emirat Hashem tomorrow is a bit of a short daf. We'll stop over here today, but I'll say understand that this machlokas in Rabba and Ula is a fundamental yisodis dik machlokas. As to at the end of the day, do we say that the default is that there is always an encumbrance against real property or not? Ula saying there is Dvar Torah. Or is it Shibuda Doraisa? Rabbi is saying Shibuda Lav Doraisa? Emir Tashem, the resolution of that machlokes in the Aloch Lamaisa, we will Emir Tashem see tomorrow. Shkai Chalasa. I will say also just a reminder, if you have not yet RSVP to the Siyum, you could see Saeed right now. He will take your reservations, Emir Tashem. The Muslim benching. Chill, that's what I see.